You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Productivity Commission have just released a report detailing how New Zealand can begin to make the moves towards a sustainable future. The report details further forestation, not deforestation, but forestation to create carbon sinks, the implementation of more policy to allow future technologies to seamlessly be implemented into a climate-focused society. I spoke to Murray Sherwin, Chair of the Productivity Commission, about what this report details.
Well, just to back up a minute, what we were asked to do here is to give some advice to both the last government and this government, actually, on how do they get from where we were at in terms of carbon emissions to what we've committed to in terms of targets. So it's about the pathways from here to there. Now, the big messages in here are that you need a price on emissions, which will motivate changes in behaviour and changes in purchasing patterns. Also need to support that with different forms of regulation. But essentially what we're trying to do here, if we're going to hit our targets, is to replace combustion of fossil fuels with clean or near clean electricity on the one hand, and change some land use, particularly in favour of greater afforestation.
I noticed that was a big talking point within the report about this forestation, and this isn't something, I mean, it has been talked about a bit, but it's not the primary focus, especially with climate change talks in the main media. Why is forestation such an important aspect that you've been focusing on?
Because we're looking for the efficient pathway to our 2050 targets, afforestation becomes important because it's a carbon sink, so it counts as a climate change mitigation strategy, and it can be done in New Zealand at a price which makes it attractive against other alternatives. So that's why we get the increased plantation of forestry anywhere between about 1.4, I think it is, and 3 million hectares, which is a big area. It sort of doubles our forest estate. The upside is that it helps us through to our 2050 target. The downside is that you can't do this forever. It's a temporary solution only. So while that's going on and while we're getting the advantage of that, we need to be working on other means to reduce our base emissions.
And in the report as well, I noticed that there was this talk of the situation at the moment with our society. We don't necessarily have all the tools and technologies, but there's a lot of talk about putting those first steps forward so that when the technology is available, that the government and the groups who are involved with the situation can move forward with it. What recommendations are made around that?
Well, a number of different aspects to that. Technology matters a lot. It's new technologies that will get us there. And we can see that in the way that, for instance, the price of solar power generation has really come down a huge distance over the last 10 or 15 years. Wind power, likewise, has got a whole lot more cheaper. So those sorts of power sources are developing and highly competitive against alternatives now. On the other hand, we're also looking for things that stop emissions. So, the rise of electric vehicles and very efficient hybrids and other technologies that cut down on emissions are extremely valuable. And we're looking for more technology of that sort, and especially in the agricultural sector where there's not a lot of technology available. There's a search for a vaccine that might reduce emissions of methane from ruminants, but that doesn't seem like it's coming around the clock anytime soon. But those sorts of things would make a big difference. But it's technological breakthroughs that will ease this transition to a low emissions future.
So it's not so much about what we can do now, but it's more about the things that we can implement now so that in future situations it is easier to overcome these issues with climate change. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And if you get the pricing signals right now and start putting some pressure on emissions, that also makes it more attractive to develop the alternative technologies and to implement those to make a difference. And so you need to get those signals out there as soon as possible. 30 years isn't that far away when we're talking about weaning an economy off 100 years of burning fossil fuels.
And you talk about the signal. The signal's an important thing, important part of addressing this issue from our government. What would a big signal to change this issue look like from our government?
Oh, I think cranking up the emissions trading scheme, which is in place but not very effective right now. So getting that in place, getting a proper cap on emissions, and beginning to see a price emerge out of that, which is going to make a difference. The government has already started talking about putting in place an independent climate change commission, and that would work along the way, along the lines of a British model, which has been in place now for 10 years. And we endorse that. We think that's a good idea. And that sort of, in a sense, depoliticizes or puts some of the shorter-term decisions at arm's length from the political process. And it's important that we get a strong political consensus to the targets that have been established, and that there is some confidence around the community that those that political consensus will be sustained over the 30-odd years. And these institutions like an independent climate change commission can help support that.
So in a way, this independent climate change commission could be sort of the intermediary between the public and the social sphere
The
government. So would you say that there's more importance, or you'd put more importance on society as a whole, not so much politicians and government-based organisations, but more society and community on addressing climate change as an issue?
Yes, it has to be broad-based. I mean, this issue of emissions runs right through our economy and our society, and that's why we talk about a price, because you can't sort of regulate your way through this. A price is pervasive and does have its impacts in all sorts of places, including places you wouldn't have thought of if you were trying to design a regulation. So, and that's what helps bring the decision points back to the wider community.
And I noticed that you've said that New Zealand has gone through larger transitions in the past. Obviously, different context in a modern context, a lot more going on and a lot more people would be affected by this. What sort of transitional teething do you think would happen in this process?
You are shifting relative prices around, and that means some businesses and industries become less profitable, and some more profitable, some less viable, and others more viable. So, you know, we're talking about a big change in an economy-wide change, it's not just a climate change issue. So that means change, and change can be unsettling for people. It may mean some jobs drop out and others come in. The reference back to comparable to other transitions we've seen, if you look, for instance, in the land use side, we've seen shifts in land use as big as what we're talking about here over the last 30 years, so that's a continuation on into the next 30 years. And if you go back into history, you know, the replacement of horses with cars, the introduction of electricity, urbanization, which occurred through the 50s and 60s, those are all big social and economic transitions. And with the right drivers, those happen, and they happen because people see benefits in making the change. And if they've got enough time and enough consistency in the messages they're getting from the politicians and out of the price system, then the transitions can occur. But one of the points we make in the document is that poorer communities may well suffer more and will need protection and support to get through this.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.